a Buffalo Insider's look at the Continental 3407 tragedy. I'm Paul Platt, and this is Arrow News. Welcome into the Arrow News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest, which is not customary on a Wednesday, is Bob Miller, flight instructor based in the Buffalo, New York area, proprietor of Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated, and the publisher of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. In the last few days since Continental 3407 went down near Buffalo, Bob has been very busy working with both local media and national media, especially in the case of NBC News. And Bob is one of the few non-investigative staff who's been actually at the crash site, and we wanted to get his perspective on a number of different aspects of this case. Bob, thanks for taking some time out today. I know things have been nuts for you.
Well, Paul, this is a particularly sad event to report on, and but the information that I think that we can talk about hopefully will be helpful in learning more about what happened and perhaps things that we can do to prevent these kind of events.
Well, Bob, before we get into details about the accident itself, give us a little geography lesson. Now, Clarence Center is on the east side of the Buffalo Metro. It's probably actually closer to your house than it is to your airport.
Oh, yes, it is. It's within 6 miles of where I live physically. It occurred about 2 miles short of the final approach fix for Buffalo's runway 23.
Okay, now, how did NBC News, first of all, get in touch with you as an expert, analyst for this coverage?
Well, I'm not really quite sure. I had been contacted by WBEN News Radio, which has a loose affiliation with our local Channel 4, which is a CBS affiliate. They ran several spots, and somehow, I don't know whether they were monitoring our local coverage and a few comments that I had made, I received a call from their producer in New York and asked if I would come out and meet with their reporter.
All right. Now, on Sunday night on NBC Nightly News, you did a piece that explained the functioning of pneumatic de-icing boots, but you've done some much more in-depth coverage with local TV stations. Tell us about the flight you just came back from.
Well, today I was out doing a training flight on a Cessna 172, a new one in 2008. It was autopilot equipped, glass cockpit, with a student, and the student asked, could we simulate what possibly took place on 3407. And I said, you know, as a matter of fact, we really could at a safer altitude. And what I did is I simply put the airplane on an autopilot, assigned it to 3,000 feet, put it on a heading, generally the heading inbound to Buffalo's runway 23. And I said, obviously, we can't put ice on the wings, but we can simulate ice by simply reducing power to cause the airplane to slow. And as the airplane airspeed slowed down, we watched the autopilot as it struggled to maintain altitude. And it did this like it would do on a Dash 8. The autopilot adjusted the trim to hold at ever-increasing pitch angle. And when we got up to about 17 degrees pitch up, very close to the critical angle of attack, bells were going off, horns were going off in the cockpit, and the autopilot suddenly released. The nose of the airplane then dropped. We allowed the airplane to yaw 30 degrees to the left, as occurred in 3407, according to the NTSB reports. And then I attempted a recovery by pulling back on the yoke after the nose had dropped, adding power, and then allowed the airplane to yaw some 60 degrees to the right. And by now, we're almost nose down to the ground, and then I pulled back to simulate a recovery, and just as we bottomed out of the recovery, at this point we're at about 2,000 feet above the ground, I said this is the point at where the airplane impacted the ground. This was a remarkably graphic, using a real-life scenario illustration of what we believed happened based upon the NTSB reports. The Channel 4 affiliate, the CBS affiliate, because of all of the coverage, asked me to serve as their News 4 aviation analyst for this and future events. So I gave them a call and I said, come back out this afternoon if you like and bring a photographer and a reporter and we'll do the same exercise again. Well, they, of course, jumped on the story. They
sure
came out and we had a videographer put him in the back seat. We went up and replicated the exercise, this time with actual video rolling. And by the time they put the piece together and was broadcast on our local CBS affiliate, I want to tell you, it was a very, very, again, dramatic illustration of just how badly things can go wrong in an airplane if the autopilot is operating to maintain altitude while slowing because of either a power reduction or drag caused by ice. Once that autopilot let loose by itself, the airplane is in a very unusual attitude. Now, as I explained to the reporter, I said recovery is quite simple because we're out here in sunny skies at a safe altitude. 3407, this event occurred in IMC conditions and at night. So the only reference that the pilots had were the displays showing on the panel. And as any instrument pilot knows, you know, instrument piloting is a walk in the park as long as the airplane remains within normal flight parameters.
Right.
But when you're in an extreme unusual attitude, now, we could only take the airplane into a 60-degree bank and stay legal in a non-aerobatic certified airplane.
Mm-hmm.
3407, that Dash 8, according to the NTSB report, was over at 105 degrees. I mean, he was over past vertical, almost inverted. To try and make a recovery solely by reference to the instruments. I mean, it would take Chuck Yeager and Sullenberger combined, and I doubt that would have been recoverable.
Well, and plus the fact that if you're doing it in a Dash 8 and you're at 1,600 feet, that's a big, big difference from a 172 at 2,000 feet above ground.
In VFR conditions. We were at VFR.
Right.
This is a, you know, 55,000-pound airplane at night in IMC conditions. But, Paul, it really begs the question, and it was a question my student asked me, and the media's been asking, how could an airplane, would ice cause an airplane to get into that unusual attitude?
Well, and, Bob, let's take a break and come back and talk about a couple possible scenarios that caused that to happen. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin Wass GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, and also, I guess, aviation analyst for Channel 4 News, WIVB-TV in Buffalo, New York. And that's kind of the context in which we're talking to Bob today. Bob's been doing some work with media to help people understand what happened just before the crash of Continental 3407 last Thursday. Bob, let's talk about some of the lessons we could draw from this for general aviation pilots, because this is a very unusual event in commercial aviation, but it happens way too often. We hear about this all the time in general aviation.
Well, sadly, this is indeed the case, and we've had notable icing accidents of late in Cirrus aircraft and other Mooney aircraft, all vintage aircraft, airplanes that are equipped with autopilots. The scenario goes something like this. The pilot is in IMC condition. The autopilot is running. Ice is accreting on the wings, and the pilot is not aware of the steadily decreasing airspeed. We tried this today in a simulated condition with a student under a hood, or actually closed his eyes. And I said, close your eyes while we do this exercise again. The autopilot is slowly pitching the airplane up as I'm retarding the power. Pilot's eyes are closed. I said, can you feel a change in pitch attitude? And absolutely not. To the pilot sitting in an airplane with a changing pitching attitude by an autopilot, you don't feel it. So So what happens is the autopilot in the general aviation or in an Airbus or in a Dash 8, in order to hold altitude with declining airspeed, the airplane will be pitched up by the autopilot. Now, in the general aviation context, the same thing happens. In several Cirrus accidents, we know this to be the case. The autopilot is on, the airspeed is decaying, the pilot is not aware of the change in airspeed or the change in pitch. The airplane now is pitched up close to its critical angle of attack by the autopilot. The autopilot can no longer hang on. It releases. The airplane is in a very unusual trim attitude. The autopilot's released. All of a sudden, the airplane now is in either a stall or worse, in a stall and spin condition. And the pilot, of course, still in IMC, now is wrestling with the controls to regain control of an airplane which is in a serious unusual attitude and cannot recover, and all is lost.
Well, now, in the case of Continental 3407, the NTSB is obviously going to sort out a few questions that a lot of us are asking about the pilot's role in all of this, and we don't want to go there at this point. But what actually mechanically could have happened? If I understood the NTSB correctly, this happened right about the time they deployed or tried to deploy 15 degrees of flaps.
Well, changing flap configuration, if there's ice on the wings, with ice on the wings, the pilot is already a test pilot. The aircraft is still flying, of course. By putting the flaps out at this point, we are now taking an airplane that's imbalanced and changing the configuration even further. So this in 3407, this is about the time the airplane went out, allegedly out of control. Lots of things could have happened. It could have been tailplane icing, although the NTSB flight data recorder is not looking at that right now because the nose did not drop suddenly, as would be the case with tailplane icing. But I think a question that you may be asking, and one that has not been discussed at all that I've heard by the NTSB, the autopilot was on, but let's suppose the crew tried to turn it off. And let's suppose it would not go off. Now, we all know that there are ways of getting the autopilot off, even if it means pulling a circuit breaker. But let's just suppose, and we don't know because we have not heard the cockpit voice recordings or a transcript of the cockpit voice recordings. There's nothing yet to suggest that there was any kind of a mechanical malfunction in the airplane. But that would be a plausible explanation in defense of the pilots, that they couldn't get the autopilot off, and the airplane now is in a runaway trim situation. And again, there's a mechanical problem that could possibly explain what took place.
All right. Well, we'll have to wait for the NTSB, I guess, to come up with its report, which is going to be probably a year. In the meantime, Bob, tell us about the impact this has had on the local community, because I know you have a keen a sense of this, but this is a very unusual thing to happen around Buffalo.
This has been a devastating. This has been Buffalo's equivalent to 9/11. I mean, I lived through 9/11 here, as we all did in Buffalo. And while the entire world, the United States in particular, had a knee-jerk reaction to 9/11, when this event hit the little community of Buffalo, New York, so many of us, every one of us, I think, in this community had a 1 or 2 degree separation from one or more victims on that airplane. Myself, not directly, but I have a student. I have two students. Between the two of them, lost 5 people, family members, on that airplane. It has devastated this town to the point that I've never seen before. The media, all 3 network stations, have been running stories around the clock. I was at the crash scene. It's a solemn place. It's a holy place. It is indescribable what we saw at the crash scene. I served a year in combat in Vietnam, and that was 35 years ago, and that brought back chilling memories of what a battlefield looks like. Terrible, terrible situation, and it's something that no community should endure, particularly from a pilot's perspective, because all of us who have been looking at this accident are asking ourselves, could it have been avoided? And I dare say the answer is yes.
Well, Bob, I have to ask you, because you make your living in general aviation now, and obviously you are acutely aware of how the image of general aviation safety affects the sales side of general aviation, both in the hardware and the flight training environments. And I have to ask you, do you think the media, A, is the media treating this fairly? And B, is this going to have a negative impact on how people view airplanes?
I think having now been on an insider view of how the media prepares this thing, there is a genuine interest to get the story right. They're not taking spending time with witnesses on the ground, non-pilots. We had one witness say they had heard people screaming as the airplane descended. Now, this is just totally implausible that would happen, and the media is playing that down. And they seem to be searching out for as much expert opinion from people allegedly or supposedly in the know as to what's going on. As for activity at our flight school, there's a recognition that life goes on, that this was a terrible accident, but I haven't seen any reduction in interest in flying. In fact, we've had more people now call our flight school than ever before, understanding that this is what we do, and there's been some media exposure and recognition of who we were by people who were not aware. So I think that they're not indicting airplanes and aviation in general so much as this was a terrible event, but terrible events happen, and life goes on.
Well, Bob, I know we look forward to talking to you again on Monday. Hopefully it'll be on a happier topic, but in the meantime, thanks for at least trying to get technically reasonable explanations of these things out to the general public, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Paul, very much.
Over the Airwaves is available online at overtheairwaves.com, and you'll also find a link there to Bob Miller Flight Training. And in the data block that accompanied this Aerocast, look for a link to Bob's report on Channel 4 News in Buffalo, New York. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.